In a world where teenage suicide has reached epidemic proportions, the government has implemented a radical solution, the program. This treatment facility identifies infected teens showing even minimal signs of depression and subjects them to aggressive memory wiping protocols. One in three adolescents takes their own lives in this America, a statistic that has transformed society into a surveillance state obsessed with teen mental health. The program doesn't just erase traumatic events, it systematically removes emotional attachments and personal relationships deemed potentially dangerous, returning teens to society as shells of their former selves. Picture a classroom where students undergo mandatory psychological assessments daily. The routine is shattered when handlers in pristine white coats storm in to remove Kendra Phillips. She fights desperately, her nails leaving bloody streaks on the floor as she screams protests of her sanity. Her classmates sit frozen, their faces carefully blank, knowing any display of empathy could mark them as the next target. After Kendra is dragged away, the teacher methodically sanitizes the scene with bleach and resumes the lesson, a chilling demonstration of how commonplace such incidents have become. Sloane and James share a profound bond forged through shared tragedy. Both witness Sloane's brother Brady's suicide. Their relationship exists in stolen moments, secret meetings under bleachers, whispered conversations away from handlers, and camping trips that offer brief escapes from surveillance. Their love is both their strength and their greatest vulnerability. Their connection is poignant in how fiercely they protect each other. James carries suicide victims' names tattooed on his arm, bearing the weight of remembrance. "I can't leave you alone," he confesses to Sloane, revealing she's his only reason for getting up each day. When their friend Miller is taken, James carves Miller's name into his arm with a pocket knife, marking him as infected. The heartbreak comes when James returns from the program with no recollection of Sloane. His eyes pass over her without recognition. This devastating scenario forces us to wonder, if memories are erased, can love somehow remain, or is it truly gone forever? What are we without our memories? Teenagers returning from treatment emerge transformed. Lacey, once fiercely independent, returns as an unsettling caricature of compliance. James comes back with his head shaved, tattoos removed, and personality reconstructed into something unrecognizably docile. The erasure extends beyond minds to physical environments. Sloane awakens to find her bedroom stripped of personal artifacts, generic clothes replacing her wardrobe, and all photographs removed. Her family maintains the fiction that Brady died in a rafting accident rather than acknowledging his suicide. If personalities are built from accumulated experiences, what remains when those experiences are systematically erased? The persistence of Sloane's connection to James, even after her memories are wiped, suggests something more fundamental than conscious memory, perhaps an essential self that exists beyond the reach of even the most invasive manipulation, challenging the premise that identity can be completely reconstructed. Would you choose to forget your deepest pain if it meant losing part of yourself? The program offers memory erasure as healing, yet questions whether this creates genuine wellness or merely an illusion, a facade of happiness covering unresolved trauma. After Brady's suicide, Sloane and James navigate grief together, their shared pain becoming a foundation for connection. They honor lost friends through remembrance, James's tattoos telling stories of those they've lost, their conversations about Brady's laugh and Miller's jokes. Their suffering, though devastating, intertwines with love and meaning. The program's cure removes both sides of this emotional coin, replacing authentic processing with manufactured contentment. Characters deliberately choose pain over numbness. Sloane burns herself to redirect emotional agony into physical pain that feels real in a world demanding artificial happiness. James carves Miller's name into his arm, choosing the pain of remembrance over forgetting. This reflects real-world questions about balancing relief from suffering with authentic emotional experience, complex issues the novel explores through its character struggles. Characters defy the program through various means. Before capture, Sloane and James resist by hiding emotions, creating private spaces, and maintaining their relationship despite surveillance. James's declaration that he'd kill himself before being taken represents choosing death over surrendering identity. Post-treatment, resistance evolves. Lacey questions the official narrative and forges therapy passes. Realm, a former handler, provides Sloane information about her past and aids her escape, revealing resistance exists within the system itself. The novel unveils an underground movement against a program. Kevin, initially presented as Sloane's handler, is actually part of this resistance. Realm arranges for Sloane and James to meet rebels at the Idaho border, suggesting possibilities for systemic change. What makes this resistance compelling is its evolution from personal to political. Characters first resist to preserve relationships and identities, but gradually recognize the broader injustice of memory manipulation as control, raising questions about when compliance enables survival and when resistance becomes a moral imperative. Who has the right to decide which memories are too dangerous to keep? The program presents memory manipulation as both treatment and control, raising profound ethical questions. Teens are taken against their will, with parents providing proxy consent while being influenced by fear, propaganda, and selective statistics. Arthur Pritchard justifies these ethical compromises through utilitarian logic. The epidemic must be stopped at any cost. He presents statistics about lives saved while dismissing concerns about consent as secondary to survival. This rationalization of rights violations for public health creates uncomfortable parallels to real-world debates about liberty versus safety. The novel offers no easy answers. While the program appears villainous, the suicide epidemic represents a genuine crisis requiring intervention. Characters like Sloane's parents aren't malicious. They're terrified of losing another child after already experiencing one suicide. Even the staff believe they're saving lives. This nuanced portrayal forces us to consider where necessary treatment ends and unethical control begins. When does protection become oppression? Can love transcend the erasure of memory? Despite the program's systematic memory manipulation, the novel affirms that human connections persist beyond conscious recall. When Sloane and James reconnect after treatment, they experience powerful attraction despite remembering nothing of their relationship. Their bodies and hearts remember what their minds cannot. During their spontaneous mud fight, they naturally fall into their old dynamic, finishing each other's sentences, anticipating movements, sharing laughter that feels both new and hauntingly familiar. When James gives Sloane a pink plastic heart ring, unknowingly replacing one he'd given her before, both experience overwhelming déjà vu. Their hands tremble, though neither understands why this simple gesture carries such emotional weight. Like muscle memory, emotional connections create neural pathways that survive even aggressive memory manipulation. The program can erase specific memories, but cannot eliminate the capacity for love or the essential traits that draw people together. True connection writes itself into our very being, an indelible mark no program can fully erase. In the end, that's the most powerful resistance, the heart's stubborn refusal to forget what matters most.